Dante led the way up the steps. The stairwell was so tight Morn and Gala not only had to duck, they had to turn their shoulders too, filling Dante's head with nightmare scenarios of one of them slipping and getting so thoroughly lodged between the steps that those above them on the stairs would be trapped, left to starve to death, or forced to burrow their way to freedom through a mass of hair and blood. After a complete turn, the stairs opened into a round, plank-floored room. Drafts blew in through the arrow slits, disturbing Dante's candle. This room was largely empty, too, besides the few rotting chairs blanketed with cobwebs and an old set of dishes, which weren't glazed but had instead acquired a fine finish of dirt. The following floors were just as barren. The tower's furnishings, in fact, gave every indication it had been in disuse for years now, if not decades, and that the last owners to put it to use had employed it as the watchtower fortress it had clearly been built as. Then, some 80 feet up, the steps became a blank, black space. Dante shoved his hands against the close walls, swearing, bracing himself against a vision of the fumbling body that would push him over the broken steps.
"Hold it!"
His voice echoed up and down. Blaze nudged him, peering over his shoulder at the spot where the steps disappeared, a void that stretched beyond the curve of the staircase. Vestigial lumps of stone projected from the walls along the missing steps' former path, but these were just a few fingers wide and, obviously, crumbly even by the meek candlelight.
"No problem," Blaze said. "Morn, get up here and throw me."
"What?" Dante said. Blaze gestured at the yawning gap.
"He throws me, I land on the other side, we all praise my name."
"You can't even see the other side." "Are you suggesting it's not there?"
"I'm suggesting you will fall and break whatever parts of yourself you land on."
"I'll cling to the wall, like a handsome raccoon."
"Raccoons known worldwide for their proverbial jumping ability."
Dante pointed at the cracked stone, jutting from where the stairs had set into the wall. "At least try that before your leap of faith." Blaze crouched down, forcing Dante back a step, and leaned forward to test the jagged stone remnants with his fingertips. Parts were wide enough for a firm toehold, perhaps for a whole shoe, but in long gaps the broken steps were flush with the sheer wall. Dust and sand sifted down into the darkness, sprinkling on the stairs a spiral below.
"I don't know about this," Blaze said.
2 seconds ago you were ready to send yourself smashing straight to hell."
"Yeah, but that would have been over in a second. All this creeping along, waiting for the ledge to crumble underneath me. It seems kind of stupid."
"I'll do it,"
Lyra said from behind them.
"You're not doing anything."
Dante looked in vain for a fly or spider he could kill, restore to unlife with the nether, and use to scout the stairs ahead.
"If you want to be helpful, start composing Blaze's eulogy. Remember to include a line about how I'm 6'9".
Blaze ran his hand down his mouth.
"All right. We tie the rope around my waist. I try to scooch along the side here. Morn holds tight to the free end of the rope while Gala sets up below to catch me if I fall.
Meanwhile, Lyra and I will shut our eyes and pray." Dante stepped away from the broken steps, pressing his back against the wall.
"Let's do this."
It took a full minute of awkward shuffling, retreating, and bumping around before Gala made it to the full turn below, where Blaze might fall, and before Blaze and Morn got in position on the lower edge of the gap. Dante took up beside Gala and sent a small white light up to the broken steps directly above them, eyeballing exactly how much of the staircase was missing. Even from below, it wasn't easy to tell. The missing portion was a good 12 feet overhead, and the tight spiral quickly stole the ascending steps from view, making it more than possible there was another broken stretch further up. But he guessed some 8 horizontal feet of stairs were missing.
He anchored the white light above the ledge where Blaze would cross, then slipped downstairs past Gala, keeping Vanetha close at hand in case of a fall. The whole stairwell smelled of fresh sweat and the sweet wax of burning candles.
"All set," he called. "I still think I should jump," Blaze echoed.
"If you fall, use your last thought to pretend that's what you did.
Make sure your head's out of the way. I don't want to get impaled."
Leather scuffed stone. Blaze grunted. His leg extended into view, tapping down on the cracked ledge. Dust speckled into Dante's eyes. He turned away, blinking hard. His light above flickered.
"Lyle's balls!" Blaze yelled. "Let's wait until the next time before we try this in the dark, huh?"
"Just trying to add to your legend."
Dante redoubled his focus, restoring the full glare of the white light. Blaze clung to the wall, palms spread, his feet turning sideways for maximum surface area along the narrow, irregular rising ledge. A rope trailed between his waist and Morn. Udin stowed himself at the lower edge of the gap, his feet and shoulders braced against the walls. Blaze took a minor step forward, dragging his back foot after. Inch by inch, he struggled on, pausing regularly to strengthen his toeholds and dig his fingertips into the crannies between stones, grimacing, panting hollowly over the ticking sound of falling grit. His next step led him to a proper foothold, a flat chunk of step protruding a full foot from the wall. Blaze extended his front foot and stepped onto the widened ledge.
"Whoa!"
He threw out his arms. Dante cringed, throwing his hands above his face. Blaze chuckled brightly.
"I'm fine. Good to see where your first instincts take you, though."
Blaze caught his breath, then carried on along the narrow lip of ruined steps. Within a minute, he reached the far side. Dante maneuvered around Gala and climbed up to the edge of the gap.
"What now?"
Partly occluded by the curve of the stairwell, Blaze jerked his thumb upstairs.
"There are some sconces and stuff on the walls. If I tie one end of the rope up here, and you secure the other down there, it should be a lot easier to cross."
Dante frowned.
"If they don't pull right out of the walls." "Well, you don't have much choice. If you stay down there, I can tell everyone you're a coward and have three witnesses to back me up."
Blaze disappeared upstairs, rope dragging along behind him. He returned seconds later to sling the loose end downstairs. Dante caught it and wound down the steps until he located a wall sconce, then knotted the rope tight around its upturned iron fingers. He began the crossing before he could have second thoughts or face further taunts. Aided by the rope, against which he could lean most of his weight, when toeholds were sparse, he proceeded quickly, heart racing. Grit twisted under his soles as the rope's rough fibers chafed his palms. He stepped onto the solid ground of the far side with physical relief.
"I think you've got a future in the carnival," Blaze said.
"I've got plenty of experience working with freaks."
"Stop!"
Morn called, strangled. Dante whirled. Through his beard, Morn was pale, features pulled in a tight rictus.
"We're only kidding," Dante said, confused yet gently. "You don't have to..." "Don't go upstairs!"
"What are you talking about? We're fine, Morn. We're not going to turn around with the bow right up these steps."
"I just heard from Josin Joe."
Dante rolled his eyes.
"Josin Joe's less reliable than a choleric's bowel movements. What you got to say this time? That by the highest place, he meant the bow's been stolen by eagles, and we'll have to enlist the Vulture King to get it back."
"He says we've been betrayed, and Cassander's personal army has surrounded the tower downstairs."
Blaze blinked. "That's specific." A prickling, dreadful heat washed over Dante's skin.
"This is a thing that's happening now?"
Morn's eyes were bright beneath his heavy brows.
"Look outside."
An icy wind knifed from upstairs. Dante headed up, Blaze on his heels, into a dusty and cobwebbed storage room. He dimmed his light until the chests and sacks glittering the floor were dim shapes of black and grey. Beneath the torn flaps of a burlap sack, a glimpse of tightly sheathed arrows sent his heart thumping. He moved past them to a window of tall sectional glass with a couple broken panes. Stars twinkled silently over the black field. Dante extinguished his light, Blaze his candle. "See anything?" Dante whispered. "A bunch of dark stuff. Think Cassander's army is made out of coal men? Wait." As his eyes adjusted, he began to pick out movements that couldn't be ascribed to breeze-ruffled weeds. Starlight glinted on steel. 80 feet below, a row of men kneeled across the road from the tower's front door. Morn's right. "You're sure? Because that would mean bad things for us. Stabby things." 20 of them. Maybe more. Dante retreated from the window and relit his candle, crouching to hide the light from the soldiers below. "It's all right. The bow's up here. We can use it to escape."
"There is no bow."
Morn's voice filtered up the stairway, ethereal, dolorous, shamed. Dante returned to the top of the gap in the stairs. Morn hadn't moved. "Their soldiers are at our feet, Morn. Very soon they're going to come up this tower or set a fire below, and you will be roasted like a very hairy and treasonous pig. Now tell me what you're holding back." The Norin looked down at his heavy palms. Fear and doubt added years to his face. He closed his eyes.
"There is no bow. Or anyway, if there is, it's just a bunch of legends that built up around a very normal weapon. When you came in questing after it, Orlin let you believe it was real."
"What?"
"He saw what you could do. That you're a sorcerer. He thought he could use you to..."
Gala rose behind the seated Morn, blade in hand.
"That's enough!"
Lyra's sword flashed from its sheath to point at Gala's back. In the same instant, Dante shaped the nether into a swirling black ball.
"Silent, or you die!"
Gala's face took on a resigned smile.
"I don't fear death. I do fear my clan."
"We're going to die down there anyway, aren't we?"
Blaze shouldered past Dante, nearly toppling him down the empty gap.
"What does it matter what we know? Our brains aren't tea leaves. When our skulls get split, all that will leak out is a bunch of goop. So sit your giant ass down and let the man talk."
Fleetingly, Gala's smile widened. She lowered her curved blade, sheathed it.
"Fine. If he wants his final act to be the dishonor of his clan, let Josin Joe judge him."
Morn kept his gaze on Dante.
"Orlin was using you to get back the cousin clan."
Dante swallowed against the tightness in his throat.
"And now he's sold us out to the enemy while he rescues his people from the mine."
"No."
Morn's face jerked up, tight with pain.
"Orlin just wanted your help. He didn't think he could secure it without making you believe you'd get the bow. You were sold out to Cassander by one of our other clansmen. He thought it was the only way to get his family back. He's the one who tipped off the Bloody Knuckles, too. Once he saw we were poised to take back the clan of the Green Lake ourselves, he confessed to Orlin and V."
"Is that it?"
The Norin's gaze flicked past his shoulder.
"The raid on the mine is real. So is the timing."
"Meaning there's hope of an even bigger distraction?"
Dante glanced at Blaze. "What do you think?"
"That they'll kill me over my dead body."
Blaze grabbed hold of the rope and searched for a toehold down the ruined steps.
"We should get downstairs. Block the door or see if we can make a run.
I'll be right behind you." Dante turned and jogged back upstairs, his mind whirled with anger and the helpless sense of being duped, of illusions torn away like shabby clothes. But there was no time for the self-pity or humiliation that welled beneath his outrage. On the upper floor, he lit his remaining candles and hurriedly placed them throughout the room. Cassander's forces thought they had surprise on top of numbers. No reason to disabuse them of their own illusions. The others had already disappeared downstairs. Dante hardly slowed on his way across the rope spanning the gritty ledge. On the other side, he lit his feet with tiny white lights to show him the way, and hurried to the ground floor, where the others waited in starlit darkness.
"I count about 40 versus 5.
Blaze slid down from the narrow window to give Gala a pointed look.
"Or should that be 4?
She shrugged her broad shoulders.
"I hope to see my clan again.
With that kind of enthusiasm, let's bump it up to 4.5. We could just let them siege us. Morn and Gala are very large, so it should take several weeks to eat them."
"We need to run," Dante said.
"I'll lead the charge."
Morn gazed at the black window.
"To erase my betrayal, I'll try to absorb as many arrows as I can."
"You getting shot to death is not a plan." Dante crept to the window. Beyond, silhouettes of soldiers arranged themselves on the other side of the road. A picket of 3 or 4 troops waited further down the road toward the mine. Presumably, a similar group was blocking the opposite route to the manor. More than 200 yards of open downhill slope separated the tower from the pine forest to the west, the obvious place for Dante to lose their pursuers, or to string them out and battle them in clusters rather than en masse.
"Suppose they've got cavalry, too."
"In reserve at best," Blaze said. "A horse snort carries pretty far at night."
"So, the good news is, the cavalry might trample the arrows right out of our backs."
"Can you make us invisible?"
Dante shook his head. "Too complicated. I would have to match the illusions to whatever was around us. On all sides. Constantly."
"Is that all?" Blaze gritted his teeth. "But you could make illusions of us, which could run out to do battle, swords in hand.
While the real us's make a break for the woods, while you wrap us up in one of those balls of darkness, like back in Bressel.
Wouldn't be able to see where we're going. We'll trip constantly. They'll be on us in seconds."
"Will you stop making this so damned hard?"
Blaze laughed. "So, we hold hands. Morn's in the middle, I'm at the front. You focus on keeping the sphere centered around Morn's big head, keeping the darkness just wide enough so I can peek out the front and make sure we're not about to plunge into a ditch."
"That is insane!"
Dante laughed too, waving one hand in dismissal. "Don't bother to ask. No, I can't think of anything better."
Lyra shook her head.
"I don't understand a word of what you two just said."
"Don't worry, neither did I." Blaze grinned. "Just hang on to my hand and cut anyone who tries to take me away."
"Are those the same orders you'd give a man?"
"I don't know. Become one, and we'll find out." Dante wasn't troubled by the idea of maintaining a shadow sphere during their run. In that alley in Bressel, the Ball of Darkness had been the very first time he'd used the nether. In fact, it had appeared completely by accident, a physical manifestation of his quite conscious desire to escape the men who'd been pursuing them. In much the same way he could hold a conversation while watching a play, he was certain he could keep up the sphere and their illusory doubles, even while being tugged along blinds down a hill. If he tripped, however, or inhaled a fly, all bets were off. Then it would be them, in the open, before some 40 armed men. There was just enough space in the tower for the 5 of them to string themselves out hand in hand. Dante conjured the shadow sphere, concealing them inside a ball of perfect black. He shrunk the sphere until Blaze called out that he could see, then held its size in his mind, memorizing the influx and arrangement of nether that would keep it at its present circumference. When he let the sphere fall away, the starlight was so crisp and silvery he could see the faces of the soldiers across the road. Dante drew the wavy knife he'd won at Nulladun and traced a stark red line down the back of his arm. Nether fed on the blood as it tipped to the floor. One by one, he shaped the shadows into doppelgangers of their waiting crew. The matches were far from perfect, Their flat eyes and chunky hair would easily be discredited in direct sunlight, but under full night, the hulking forms of two Norren would be unmistakable. He finished the illusion with two human males, one blonde and one dark-haired, and a woman with her long brunette locks clamped tight in a ponytail. Lyra watched her double walk to the door with the strange half-smile of someone who's just heard something unspeakably rude. "Well," Dante said slowly, his focus splintered between the five stiff figures, "I hope I don't die with a stupid look on my face." Morn lifted the board braced across the entry. Dante leaned into the heavy wood door and flung it wide, leaping back into the safety of the tower. Someone whistled sharply from the enemy lines. Dante narrowed his eyes. The five images hunched down and crept out the door one by one.
"Stop!"
a man called from outside in a clear tenor. Dante straightened the figures and sent them racing north, paralleling the road to the mine. The man repeated his order. The five real people gathered just inside the tower doorway, linking hands. Blaze at the front, Morn in the middle. With the illusions 50 feet away and gaining distance fast, Dante summoned the shadow sphere to center on Morn's head. Total blackness painted his eyes.
"Go!"
Blaze hissed. A moment later, Morn's thick hand yanked Dante forward, his right arm jangled, tugging Gala behind him. His feet swished into the weeds. Dante could no longer see the illusions except in his mind's eye, where they pumped their feet and sent horrified glances at every shout and command of Cassander's troops. But he heard the arrows slashing the air, the thump of the soldiers' boots in sprinting pursuit. His own foot slipped in the damp grass. The shadow sphere flickered, allowing a ghostly glimpse of sword-bearing men charging away after the illusory silhouettes. For an instant, both of Dante's feet left the ground, his arms straining between the two Norren's unholy strength, and then he found his footing and ran and ran. He redoubled his focus. The shadow sphere returned to total darkness. His feet struck packed dirt, jarring painfully. Some ways to his left, what he hoped to the gods was the south, hooves thudded the turf. Then he was back in the grass, feet churning. Morn grunted in pain, but didn't break stride. Up the road, a man cried out a string of incredulous profanity. Dante kept hold on the doubles and the shadow sphere. The confusion spread to a babble of voices, each soldier demanding, in his own specific phrasing, to know what in the nine hells was happening. Dante relaxed his hold on the sphere. Across the road and a couple hundred yards toward the mines, a man poked his sword into one of the false Norren and waggled the weapon from side to side. Dante sent a final pulse of nether to the images. They popped in a rainbow-hued burst of silent light. Men cried out in surprise. The woods waited just ahead, thrusts of pine mixed with harvested stumps that could easily break an ankle. Dante dropped the shadow sphere completely, his hands slipped from Morn's and Gala's. Behind them, men scattered across the grass, hollering frustrated updates. Torches flared, casting yellow light and long shadows. Dante pounded into the fringes of the wood. For a moment, he thought they might escape without being seen at all.
"In the trees!" a man shouted. "Right there!"
Faces swung to stare their way. Men broke into dead runs, torches flapping, swords in hand. Archers set their feet. Moments later, the first arrows hissed through the leaves, smacking into trunks and burying shafts half a foot into the damp earth. Blaze swore and veered left through the pines, then swung into a sharp right. Lyra began to limp. Blaze fell back with her, and after a moment's hesitation, so did Dante. The two Norren slowed to a jog as well. Torches flashed between the trees, closing. It was a matter of time. Yet the chase had strung out Cassander's soldiers, house guards with little discipline. Feet thrashed through weeds and leaves. Blaze stopped and whirled, ripping his swords from their sheaths. The nearest guard was a good 20 feet in front of the others. His eyes widened as he pounded down the slope, unable to stop.
"Is this how you treat your guests?"
Blaze's sword sent the man's head spinning into the grass. Three more soldiers rushed down the hill. Dante flung a bolt of nether through the closest man's chest. The soldier's breath left him in a horrid groan. He crashed into the undergrowth, skidding face first. The two others stopped, faces painted with sudden fear, torches crackling. Bursts of shadow leapt from Dante's hands. Blood flashed in the starlight. The two men gurgled in the ferns.
"For Beckenridge!"
a man screamed from up the slope. 10 soldiers spilled down with him. Something heavy thumped behind Dante. Gala lay on the grass, an arrow jutting from her skull. Morn lifted his gaze from the body. Wordless, he strode forward, raised his heavy sword, and slammed it down on the first man to reach him. His opponent blocked with a high, crossword slant. Steel banged on steel. The man's sword shot out of his hand, thudding to the dirt. Morn's next blow cut straight through the man's warding arm and halved his head. Swords and blood and screams moiled in the torchlight and darkness. To Dante's left, Blaze punched his sword forward to meet an incoming blade, the weapons straining between their chests. Blaze dipped his offhand blade, jabbed the soldier's foot. The man yelped and fell. Blaze stabbed him without looking, parrying the thrust of another guard. A man rushed Dante, straight sword aimed at his chest. Dante intercepted with his own, dropping back 2 steps from the man's downhill momentum, and sent a spear of nether battering through his ribs. Beside him, Lyra fainted again, then stumbled. As her opponent closed with a downward stroke, she lunged forward. The stumble, too, had been a feint, angling to the outside of the man's swipe and driving her own blade through his stomach. Uphill, a mounted man stopped his horse and turned it sideways. His downy hair glowed in the torchlight. Shadows flocked to Dante's fingers. He danced back from a man with a spear, putting Morn between them, and winged a dark bolt for Cassander's midsection. White sparks burst from the lord's stomach. Cassander cried out, slumping from his horse and collapsing to the ground.
"Your lord is dead!"
Dante summoned a point of light high above his head, so bright and piercing he thought he could see the soldiers' skulls through their skin.
"Do you want to die with him?"
Cassander's guards shrunk back. Several bolted for their master, lying motionless in the grass. A bow whispered. An arrow gashed through Dante's left ear. "I say we try the running again," Blaze said. Morn sheathed his sword, grabbed up Lyra, and slung her onto his back. She blinked, hoisting her sword to keep it from slashing the giant man. Other than the blood dripping down her temple, Gala still hadn't moved. Dante turned and ran down the hill. The land dropped sharply. Every step threatened to spill him. Morn somehow matched pace, Lyra bouncing on his back. A handful of arrows hissed past. The guards resumed the chase, torches winking behind the trees. But between the skirmish and those who'd stayed behind to tend to Cassander, the pursuers were less than half the number that had gathered beneath the tower. That, perhaps, explained why they stopped 5 minutes into the chase, their fires shrinking with each step Dante took through the wet grass. Dante heard nor saw any cavalry either. The slope was too steep for horses, the night too full, but suspected they'd patrolled the roads for days. Still they ran, leveling out and splashing across a frozen creek, then climbing through slippery pine needles and frost-glittered ferns. At the top of the hill, Morn called for a stop. Blaze bared his teeth, breathing hard. He gazed downhill and planted his hands on his hips.
"Well, I don't think we have to worry about starting a war anymore."
"What are you talking about?" Dante said. "That was a disaster."
"Exactly."
Blaze nodded down the slope. Dante turned. At the mines, miles to the north, a great fire glared in the night, gouting white smoke. Far south, a second fire burned from the manor where they'd spent the last 3 nights.
"I'd say the war's already begun."
Chapter 6
"Well then," Dante said, "let's be on our way." Blaze blinked in the moonlight.
Did you hear me? That war we were trying so desperately to avert? Here it is.
Right now, I'm a little more concerned about that.
Dante tipped his head to the woody valley, lightly smeared with mist and smoke. Beagles howled from the trees.
I don't think I'll be worried about a war after I'm passed through a dog's belly and deposited on some lord's lawn.
You think being a pile of shit's going to save you? That'll just make it easier for Kelly to stomp you.
Dante offered his hand to Morn, who looked cadaverous beneath his beard.
Sorry to part this way. Perhaps we'll meet again.
Morn stiffened.
I thought I might come with you.
We're going back to Narashtovik. We're done with your clan.
I'm afraid I am too.
What are you talking about? Blaze said. You can't just run off on your clan.
The Norrin tipped back his high chin, frowning down on them.
I can do whatever I want. I can jump down this hillside if I determine that to be a rewarding course of action. If you wouldn't consider me a millstone around your neck, I'd like to come with you.
We could use your help with her anyway.
Dante nodded at Lyra.
Lyra raised an eyebrow. I'll be fine. It's a sprain, not an amputation.
Lyle's balls! I'm just saying you can't run at a time when we may need to. Can we get a move on?
She nodded, mollified. Dante cut east down the slope, reckoning by the stars and the twin columns of smoke. His footsteps stirred the scent of pine needles and minty wintral leaves. Even with Lyra leaning on Morn's shoulder, the huge man moved lightly, stepping over low branches to leave them undisturbed. Not that it would help if the dogs caught up with him. If that happened, Dante would have to resort to methods that would provoke some very sharp words from Blaze. The canopy closed above their heads. Birds peeped from the darkness. The howls of the hounds faded, miles away. Chasing the clan of the Nine Pines, then. Dante expected the clan could take care of itself. It had certainly taken care of his own small contingent.
Orlin and V had played them like a hand of two bluff.
Oh, you're looking for the quivering bow. Right this way. It happens to have been stolen by our worst enemy. If you'd like it back, all you have to do is everything we ask.
Dante had let them lead him by the hand like a child crossing a thoroughfare. That knowledge tingled in his gut and prickled down his skin, hot and nauseous. In the cold, he felt his cheeks flushing. He'd let himself be swindled, blinded by a fantasy of a bow that can turn the tide of war by itself. Cassander had done the same, letting his people feed Dante vague hints of the Lord's wondrous new weapon, baiting the trap for Dante to make his move. Blaze was right. The burning of Cassander's estate would spark the very war he'd been trying to stave off, and yes, in all likelihood, that war would have come at some point, no matter what they'd done. Gask wasn't going to just shrug as its Norrin vassals shucked their chains and began governing themselves. Eventually it would have come to blows. Many thousands of them, in fact. But it didn't have to come so soon. The stars had shifted by degrees by the time they struck camp. Fog drifted from the pines, pattering the tarp strung above their heads. Dante had a look at Lyra's leg. The healing wound was scarring nicely, but the skin around was swollen and pink. He soothed the ache with a flood of cool nether, then did the same for her sprained ankle. No one had even bothered to suggest striking a fire. Blaze passed around hard sausage and harder bread, crumbs falling from his lips. He thunked down in front of a tree and leaned against its mossy trunk.
I don't see why we're bothering to run, he said. Not when Callie's just going to glare off our heads the moment we step foot in the city.
He knew the risks. Dante gestured in the direction of the Norrin territories. This whole enterprise was his idea.
And I think it was also his idea that we not take a torch to one of our enemy's bluest bloods.
Then he probably shouldn't have sent us.
Blaze grinned.
You know, he might actually buy that. Who is this Callie?
Lyra said.
Another enemy?
The pair laughed. Blaze rubbed his mouth.
I don't know. Do you think a dog considers its worms the enemy?
Dante tipped his head.
I'd say he's more like a bull who can't tell the difference between the flies and his own hooves.
I don't follow your path.
Lyra frowned.
Kali is the lord of the Sealed Citadel and head of Aron's council at Narashtovik,
Dante said. I know him from our homeland. He taught me most of what I know. About the Nether, anyway. I wouldn't even want to know what he thinks about art or women. He's an extremely clever and capable leader, who runs things in a way that would probably look outright blasphemous to the attendees of his weekly masses. In short, he's cunning, demanding, and unpredictable, but I know him well enough to guess he'll be madder than he's ever been.
But you were pursuing a just cause,
freeing the people you want to protect. Won't that count for anything?
If anything, it'll make him madder.
Blaze laughed again. Anyway, we weren't blazing the trails of righteousness. We were chasing a fairy story.
Dante fought the flush down from his face. Which won't help. Lyra's face slowly went blank.
Might he try to harm you?
He's no Vartigan. He won't stuff our intestines with pork.
Dante took a bite of cold sausage.
But to redeem ourselves, he'll probably expect us to do a series of very dangerous things.
Blaze scuffed his boot across the dirt, kicking away stray stones.
Then again, that's what makes it so much fun.
Lyra nodded, but the lines on her brow and lip suggested what she left unsaid. Dante gazed into the dark woods. Mice crept through the leaves. Every few minutes, an owl screeched like it was calling from another world. He hadn't heard the dogs in a couple of hours. They were miles east of the manor. He wondered if Blaze would accept first watch. His use of the Nether back at the tower had frayed his nerves. He might pass out soon.
"Do you really think this will lead to war?"
Morn said. Dante looked up.
The Norren hadn't said a word in more than an hour.
How closely do you monitor the political sentiment in Setevan?
I follow my clan.
His beard twitched unreadably.
We keep to ourselves.
Well, the king's not dumb. Setevan knows what's going on. They can see the Norren are gearing up for independence, but we've been very careful to deny them any explosive proof. Tonight, with the assistance of a contingent of humans from Narashtovik, an outlaw clan broke into a nobleman's manor deep in Gascon lands, made off with his property, and killed any number of human citizens in the process.
Which other human citizens will take offense to?
Popular opinion is a form of currency, Dante said. Tonight we dropped a gold brick in their laps.
The Norren nodded. Through their talk, he hadn't quite met Dante's eyes. His gaze began to drift toward the center of their camp, where they might have built a fire if they weren't eluding pursuit.
So what's the plan tomorrow?
Blaze clapped.
Some light robbery. Fatten our purses enough for 3 horses and an elephant for that one.
He jerked his thumb at Morn.
I thought we'd go downriver, Dante said.
Northwest.
That's the way the river goes.
We are talking about the same Narashtovik, right? The same one that's thoroughly northeast.
Hundreds of miles northeast. The distance between which may be thick with people looking for our faces.
Take the river to the ports at its mouth, then sail back to Narashtovik.
Blaze narrowed one eye at Lyra. What do you say?
Yalan's a busy port, Lyra said. Whatever you think is best.
Morn didn't glance away from his imaginary fire at camp's center.
I've never been this far north, unless my parents took me here when I was very small. But even if they did, I don't remember anything that would make my input worthwhile.
Blaze shrugged. I like ports. No one stays there too long for you to get sick of them. And if they do, you can just ship yourself off instead. Whether or not the rest of the group agreed, that ended the conversation. Dante found his head snapping upright. He nodded off.
"I'll take first watch,"
Morn said, meeting his eyes for a moment.
"For now, my brain would rather think than sleep."
Dante didn't pretend to protest. Sleep rolled over him as sudden and unstoppable as a landslide. He spent most of the next day's walk to the river thinking about what he'd say to Callie. Maybe that was part of his motivation for wanting to sail home rather than taking the overland route. On a boat, you were much more likely to be racked on a reef or enslaved by pirates or stranded on an island beyond sight or hope of shore. Some ships just disappeared completely, like they'd sailed beyond the rim of the world. If he got lucky, maybe the same thing would happen to him. Ultimately, there wasn't much to say. He could play up the idea they were primarily involved to help the two clans and thus earn their loyalty, but he'd still have to explain about the quivering bow. Callie would find out somewhere else anyway. For him, ears sprouted like mushrooms. Dante and Blaze weren't the only ones he had gallivanting around the Norrin territories. Sombo was out there as well, and he had an entire network of scouts, spies, and informants. Anyway, Callie would have planned for the contingency of sudden war. It was not in his nature to assume all would follow his most ideal plan. Still, Dante did not look forward to bearing the bad news. The river was wide and grey and cold. Smooth rocks clattered along its muddy banks. Fishing villages poked from the mist every few miles. At dusk, the lanterns of a modest town glimmered over the black water. Their group encamped a quarter mile from the road with the intention of enlisting passage downriver in the morning. Given their combined coinage could be held in a single palm without spilling, Dante wasn't certain how they'd hire their way, but there was always violence. Though they'd seen no sign of pursuit during the day, Dante once again ruled out a fire, no matter how badly his feet and legs ached from the walk. The others were quiet and heavy-lidded, lost in their own thoughts of future days. Dante conjured up a small figure of light and shadow, sculpted its hair into Blaze's tight crop, and shaped a tiny scabbard on its back and hip. For the next several minutes, he sent the figure bumbling over leaves, pawing through the grass, and scrabbling up trunks and limbs, each quest ending with an abrupt fall, be it of the figure to the ground or a spectral boulder on top of the figure, until Dante sensed his audience growing tired. With a flourish, the figure drew its swords, one white and one black, cocked its head in confusion, then drove both blades through its own ribs. It disappeared with a pop and a wisp of shadow. "I think you're in the wrong line of work," Blaze said. "You should be touring taverns." "I thought it was funny," Lyra said. "Thanks." Dante was surprised at himself. He wasn't normally the type to care about morale. The task itself should be important enough to command the focus of whoever pursued it. Perhaps he was trying to distract himself, too. He and Blaze had been playing this shadowy business for years, getting weapons to the scattered clans, forging relationships and alliances, traveling in disguise as merchants and field workers and Malish pilgrims, all the while looking to subvert the Gascon lords who claimed the Norrin Hills. In its way, it had very much been a game, like children dressing up as pirates and bygone heroes, or concealing themselves with branches and cloaks while their parents pretended not to see them. All this was about to change. There would be no denying the realness of their actions once wheat fields burned and smoke rose from the ashes of 10,000 homes. Dante had seen plenty of skirmishes. One time, he'd even fought in a proper battle with a few hundred to a side. They'd piled the dead in pyres and choked on the greasy clouds. What would the Norrin territories look like a month from now? A year?
"I could tell a story."
Morn stared into the empty center of the camp.
"If you are people who find stories entertaining."
Blaze gave him a skeptical look.
I prefer to be entertained by boredom. Stories and music just bore me, which then entertains me, which then bores me, and... Hold on, my head's about to burst.
Is that a no?
Dante smiled with half his mouth and gestured at the bare earth beneath their dewy top.
Does it look like you'd be interrupting our great works?
Out with it.
Morn's watery brown eyes flicked between the group. Okay. Well, promise you'll tell me if it gets too long.
Blaze mock scowled. Please, Morn, there's a lady present.
This is from a very long time ago, from before the animals forgot how to talk.
He pursed his lips.
Or maybe we just forgot how to talk to them. That seems equally likely, doesn't it? How come it's always their fault? Pretty arrogant of us talking creatures, if you ask me.
Getting long, Blaze warned.
Back then, crows lived in big flocks, 50, even 200 at once. They sang to each other because they thought it was fun. Their voices were different then, too, not all nasty and mad. Instead, some had voices like thick blankets after a night in the snow. Others had voices like fast streams after a run through summer hills. For a long time, the flocks lived alone in the pines, singing to each other, talking.
One day, a lost traveller wandered into their woods.
He heard the crows singing, talking. He tipped back his head, more lost than ever in their music, transfixed until that night when they roosted in the boughs. The traveller found his way home to the lowlands, and he told the others what he'd heard. Soon, all kinds of travellers climbed into the high forest. They listened to the crow's song, too. After a few weeks of watching his fellow villagers climbing up and down the mountains, a clever man decided to catch some crows and bring them back to town so he could charge people to hear them sing. At first, he couldn't catch any of them. The crows knew the forest so well they could have escaped even with a broken wing. But the man came back with his nets every day, and finally he caught 2 crows. He brought them home and opened a little theatre, and all the other villagers came to hear the crows sing, to hear them talk. But that didn't stop the people from hiking up the hills. Other men wanted to open little theatres of their own. Soon, everyone in the village wanted a pair of crows for their own home, for pets, to ease the hours on their farms and mills. More and more crows left in cages. The old birds in the flocks didn't know what to do. The people kept coming, more and more of them, and they had cunning nets and snares. They were patient, too. They hid in the trees until the crows landed for the night, then snatched them up in bags and carried them off to distant lands.
Morn paused, running his hands through his thick hair. All the while he'd stared into the imaginary fire, even squinting as he spoke, as if warding away the glare of flames that weren't there. He let out a long breath.
But a young crow named Non was getting angry. Like all crows, he knew they weren't born with their sweet voices, their soothing songs. Berries grew among vines that lived in the crowns of the pines, and if he ate the berries, the roughest voice grew as smooth as glass. Non wanted to tell the people about the berries. If they grew them for themselves, they could eat them and sing to each other, instead of coming to steal the crows away from their homes. The elders exchanged one look, then locked Non up in a cage of their own. They refused to let him out until he promised not to tell. The people kept coming, stealing crows, sometimes whole flocks. The old crows accepted this because most escaped to have more fledglings and keep their flocks alive. When Non grew sick of his cage, he made his vow to the elders. He was released. He kept his vow. Perhaps it could have lasted this way forever, a few crows lost here and there to greedy hands while the luckier ones lived on. But one night, on a hike up the mountain, a man dropped his lantern. Flaming oil boiled up the trunks. The whole forest burned to the ground. The crows had wings, so the flocks flew together to a new forest. But this forest had none of the vine berries. Soon, the crows lost their cool song, their warm words. They croaked and squawked. To their ears, the sound was so hard and ugly, they couldn't stand to hear each other speak. The flocks broke apart. They stayed apart. Now, crows live alone. They glare at people from the branches. And when a man grows too close, crows curse and spit until he goes away. Morn didn't move, but he seemed to shrink in the silence that followed his story. Lyra nodded, eyes downcast. Blazer's brows knit together and stayed tied, unusually serious. Dante watched Morn. I haven't heard that one before. Venoran didn't look up. What did you think?
I liked it. Very much.
I mean about none. Do you think he should have told the humans about the berries, or should he have kept quiet like his flock wanted him to?
The whole damn forest burned down, Blaze said. Of course he should have told them. But he vowed not to, Lyra said. Could you betray your people like that? I'd rather hang myself.
Blaze cocked his head.
Can crows get hanged? They seem awfully light. It can't be done.
She rose and paced the cleared ground, head rumpling the underside of the sagging tarp.
Your loyalty is all you have. If you forfeit that, you burn the forest of your soul.
Morn watched her, expressionless, then slowly turned to meet Dante's eyes.
What do you think?
Dante held up his palms.
I can't say. Yeah, the forest burnt down, but none didn't know that would happen. Judging from hindsight is like betting after the fight is won.
What would you have done?
If I thought it was the right thing to do.
Dante shook his head. I would have brought the berries down myself and broken the wing of anyone who tried to stop me.
Morn laughed through his nose, mouth maintaining its blank straight line. If I had to bet, which I don't, I bet you would.
Cavernous sorrow opened across his face, then disappeared. He smoothed his beard.
Joson Joe doesn't speak to us.
That doesn't mean he frowns on what we're doing, Dante said. Anyway, gods can't speak to you every second of the day, Blaze said. He's probably off doing godly things, screwing a goose or whatever.
I don't just mean us.
Morn gestured across the small camp.
He doesn't speak to anyone. Well, I can't state that as fact. Maybe he really does speak to some people. We probably think they're crazy, though. But he certainly doesn't speak to me, or to Orlan, or to V.
Dante glanced between the others. What are you talking about?
I said, we don't speak to Joson Joe.
Morn reached for his silver and bone earring, carefully unclasping it from the rim of his coin-sized ear. He extended it to Dante, gaze level.
We speak to each other.
Understanding hit Dante as quickly as the memory of a chore you were supposed to have handled the day before. Acceptance took significantly longer. Such a thing couldn't exist. it was just as imaginary as the quivering bow, and possibly just as powerful.
What the hell does that mean?
Blaze scowled at Dante. You look like you're about to kiss him with your eyes, and find out whether those eyes have tongues.
Dante said.
Morn just gazed back. Dante hesitated, mouth half open. Morn couldn't really be saying that. If Dante said what he thought Morn meant, he'd look like a fool, a child, the kind of simpleton who believes every story he hears about fairies, dragons, and the sexual prowess of men from the Golden Coast.
Are you saying what I think you're saying?
Morn nodded. At last, Dante shook his head.
I don't know what you'd call it.
We call them loons, Morn said.
Of course you do, Blaze said. Now tell me what they are before I embed you in this tree.
If I understand correctly, Dante said slowly, loons are a way of speaking. He glanced at Morn, who nodded.
Across great distances.
Correct, Morn said.
Blaze rolled his eyes and flung up his hands.
So? Battlefield trumpets can do the same thing.
Is there any limit to how far they can talk? Dante asked Morn.
Not that I know of.
The Norrin shrugged.
But I don't know much about loons besides they exist.
Dante turned to Blaze. If you're capable of anything besides flapping around like a salmon, think for a moment. If we had a set of these, we could tell Cali what happened right now. As soon as he got done shouting at us, he could then tell us what to do next. He gestured at the dark woods. If we had loon-equipped scouts across Gask, they could report the moment some lord levies his troops. If we posted them along the river, they could tell us the instant Gask's armies cross into the Norrin territories. We would know every step of their advance as they took it. Meanwhile, their reports would lag behind, by hours, days, weeks. Blazer's head tipped so far back he looked straight down his nose.
I can see how that could be useful.
Forget that quivering bow of yours, Lyra said. It sounds like you found something even greater. Silence retook the camp. Again, Dante thought about his future. From their downcast faces, he knew the others were doing the same. This time, however, it was not with unease and mounting dread, but with wary optimism.
Like spotting the hole in a rickety bridge before it plunged him into darkness. If he was careful, he could still find a way to the other side.
Well, that was only true if he learned to harness the loon, to make more. He looked up from the bit of bone and metal. I'm going to need this, Morn.
I know.
I may have to take it apart, or break it. For all I know, I'll have to eat it. The big man raised his bearish shoulders.
Do whatever you want with it. It won't be speaking to me again.
Dante worked through the night. He hadn't meant to. It was just that, after what could only have been an hour and a half with the loon, two at most, he looked up to see the grey-blue breath of pre-dawn warming the trees of the eastern shore. He sat back on the dirt, suddenly bone-weary, as much from nether-spending and lack of sleep as from the knowledge that he likely wouldn't get any rest until they were snuggled into a cabin on a barge, punt, or river schooner headed for the sea. The loon had resisted him. Any artifacts powered by nether or ether were excessively rare. The only one Dante owned was the torch stone, a source of light as portable as a coin, immune from the dangers of blowing out or setting unexpected fires, and capable of glowing brightly for a couple hours before it needed some sleep of its own. Dante hadn't yet explored much artificing himself.
He was aware of some theory, sure. The main problem appeared to be that the raw energy of nether and ether was notoriously difficult to bind to the solid matter of bone or rock or steel. It tended to slip away, to leach